Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution and production made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Learn more about KPP's balanced income program using KPP's time-tested ability to identify undervalued assets. They created a strategy designed to accommodate investors who have a lower risk tolerance, but still desire some exposure to the potential growth of the stock market. Find out more about it when you're ready on investtalk.com. Just click on the Investments tab. End of commercial. And now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, August 8th, 2016 edition of InvestTalk. And as always, InvestTalk is here to rise above the ranks of the average investor, help you rise above the ranks as well. Now, like most disciplines, the more you learn, the less you understand how much you really know. Or really don't know, sorry. Now, it goes for investing as well. The more you kind of dig into all the variables that go into different companies, analyzing different companies, analyzing the economy, analyzing a portfolio, analyzing your particular personal situation, the more you realize how much you need to figure out. Now here's an example. Most college finance courses cover a topic called the efficient market hypothesis. This theory basically states that asset prices are perfectly efficient, meaning all assets are rationally priced based on available public information. Thus, no one can consistently outperform the market over time. Now, as a beginning investor, you might believe that this is true. It's talked about in finance books. You know, I read it in college. Luckily, I had a little bit of knowledge beforehand, so I didn't fully, you know, buy into it, but I understood kind of the premise of it. But if you look at it more in depth, the more experience you gain, the more you realize that the theory is completely false. The biggest flaw in the efficient market premise is that it ignores human psychology and emotion. And that's really what it comes down to. The thesis is that the market is efficient and rational. But in reality, who's trading markets? Well, humans. Humans are making buy and sell decisions. Well, humans are emotional. Humans have bias. That's just who we are. So markets are not going to escape that. If humans were perfect beings who operate without bias or emotions, then the theory might hold water. If we were completely rational, it would hold water. But clearly we all know this is far from true. If you study the markets, you study the decisions the average person makes. The average person chases returns. They run from asset classes that have been down recently, big. And they run towards the asset classes and companies that either in the news or had big returns recently. And this is a cognitive bias that leads to irrational decisions. Even Warren Buffett rebuffs the efficient market hypothesis. Now, for all those reasons, it's important to be in touch with the psychology and emotions of the market. And I'm not talking just about the stock market. I'm talking about real estate market, commodities, bonds, etc. Now, if you're in tune with that, where the psychology and emotions lie with the market in general and the people that are investing in the market, you'll understand that at certain times investors act irrationally, and irrational decisions lead to mispricing of assets on the upside and the downside. Think of the housing market back in 2005. Well, the irrationality of, housing prices never go down. And that psyche, or that mantra, that mentality got into the psyche of the average person. And that created irrational decisions. They weren't looking at fundamentals. It was just this irrational mantra that really was too simplistic. And that pushed prices so high into irrational levels. And we saw this on the downside with gold and gold miners late last year. We were talking about how it was one of our favorite sectors in the market. Everyone called it a rock. Gold is just a rock. Well, it's not. It's a precious metal. But everyone was saying it's a rock. It's worthless. It's not money. Well, what's happened so far this year? The exact opposite. So when you are in tuned with the flows in the market, the flow of psychology in the market, you can avoid areas that are overpriced and invest in areas that are mispriced to the downside or underpriced because of irrational decisions. Now, this does not necessarily mean that, there's great opportunity in this market. It doesn't. In today's market, bonds are everyone's favorite asset class due to investors chasing returns. They're chasing current yields and past returns. Now, taking a gauge of asset class sentiment and pinpointing extremes is crucial to investing success. Being contrarian during those times of excessive emotional swings can save you from great headache, heartache, and hopefully reveal spectacular opportunities as well. So what's your money question? What emotions do you feel right now? Or maybe you have a story of the emotions that you got caught up in the past. I want to hear those as well. Maybe you're wondering about other good sources of information. I have some ideas for you if you ask. Or any questions about investing or managing your money, check in now to our 24-hour listener line. That number, as always, is 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve, Justin, Chris here calling from Dallas, Texas. Great show. Listen to the podcast. Guys put together a great piece of work. Wondering about the election and what your guys' take is in that. Specifically, what stocks you'd be looking at as a safe bet against the upcoming election and how that may affect the markets as we go into the fall. Thanks. Look forward to hearing your response online. Talk to you then, bud.
All right, great question. We are in the election season. I think we're under 100 days, maybe around 90 days now until the next election. And it's a very divisive election. Both of the major party candidates have the highest dislike rating dislike rating, let's call it. I forgot exactly the term they use in election history. So most people don't like either candidate. And so it's causing people to kind of worry. And I think their worries are founded really in both cases, in either party. But the question is, do you make a decision from a financial perspective? And the answer is, I would say no. And I can't really recommend you an individual stock or anything like that. You can call up and ask about a stock, but per SEC rules, we can't, I can't just throw out stocks like that. But I think I've talked about this before, about presidents get way too much blame and way too much credit for what happens in the economy. Way too much. I mean, if you understand the economy, and you understand the limited powers that the president has within our political system, our government, which is three branches. Now, they have the most out of any one person, but there's still checks and balances with the House and the Senate, and then you have the Supreme Court. They really just don't have a lot of influence, at least in the near term. Sure, they can enact things kind of that affect budgets and trends long term, but in the near term, especially just the 4 years that they're in office, they don't control enough. I would say the Fed has far more power. Far more power on the economy in the short term than the president does. It's not even close. Not even close. All right. So don't get too caught up in that in relation to your portfolio. Now, the average investor may be bored by a bond investing strategy. Although this asset class does not offer the same thrill as the stock market, it can greatly improve your financial health in many different ways. InvestTalk insiders have access to one of our straightforward info sheets. It's called Fixed Income Benefits. So why not sign up if you're not already an insider? Just go to investtalk.com. It's free. I'm ready for your money questions. This is InvestTalk, and my direct line, as always, is 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, 41% of investors reported they believe having their net worth in a single mutual fund is sufficient diversification. And I think that's pretty crazy. We're going to get into whether or not you think your portfolio is diversified and discuss the different how you can buy two different assets that probably seem fairly similar, but they're going to have very different effects on your portfolio. So we're going to talk about that coming up. I also want to talk about why do some companies pay a dividend while others do not? And should you only invest in dividend-paying stocks? So we're going to talk about that. Then we're going to get to Walmart's announcement of buying Jet.com. I think that's going to be interesting to discuss. And then five signs that you're living beyond your means. And I think a few of you out there probably are. So we're going to get to that. But let's take a quick look at today's market. The Dow was off 14 points. The S&P was off about 2. The NASDAQ was down about 8. Very modest down day in the markets. We had a good jobs number on Friday. And I think the big question is, what's the Fed going to do? We had a good jobs number. The GDP report earlier in the year for the first two quarters was pretty meek. So that could be their argument for not raising rates. But I certainly could see them trying in September. And, the market's overpriced. It's overbought. But it's also trying to break out as well. So, I don't think it's there yet. But it's trying to do it. So I think in the next couple weeks will be very, very crucial to see if the market can do that. Now, why do you need to understand your risk tolerance before you invest? So without coming to grips with your acceptance of investing risk, you really can't make up a plan that makes sense for you. It's important to pinpoint that number. So use our free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com and find it. It's a quick quiz and it's free on investtalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab. All right, let's try to answer a question sent in via text, which you can do as well to the same number as always, our listener line number, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. You can call that number live 4 to 5 Pacific time. Talk to me live, or you can leave a message after hours if you're not listening live, or you can just text your question and we will answer it on the show, just like Daria did. And it says, hi, Steve and Justin. I have a question about Restoration Hardware, ticker symbol RH. I picked this up at around 28. And if it keeps going down, I'm wondering how low should I let it go before I sell my position and take a loss? Is there a rule of thumb before setting a stop loss? I suffer from the age-old problem of taking profits too early and losses too late. So he's looking at, or Daria, I believe that's a female. She's looking at RH, and we picked this up as well, kind of around the area that you're talking about, around 28. Now it's at $30.47. I think it's trying to find a bottom here. It's going to fluctuate. It's going to be volatile. That's just the nature of it. This is a stock that's come down from a high of about $106 just late last year. And now it hit a low of 24, and we bought it at 28, and now it's at 30 and a half. And so I think this is a name that will rebound strongly. It has good values at these levels. The out would be the low. To me, if it breaks that low of 24, I'd probably be out. Your out is up to you, really. How much risk are you willing to take? And that's what you have to ask yourself anytime that you are looking at a name. What are the support and resistance levels? How much risk versus reward could this have? And to us, I think this has a lot of reward potential on the upside. So, but it's going to be a bottoming process, and it's going to be volatile, and that tends to be that way during a bottoming process. It tends to be up and down, 7, 8, 10% very quickly, and eventually it'll probably break out, but, it could break the lows. It's hard to say, but I would still hold on to RH Restoration Hardware. Now, let's talk a little bit about diversifying your portfolio. And there was a recent survey from Insight Financial Strategists, and it said 41% of investors reported that they believe having their net worth in a single mutual fund is sufficient diversification. Now, on the surface, that kind of makes sense, because the average mutual fund, or even the most concentrated mutual fund, still usually has a couple dozen stocks in it. So it's pretty diversified. However, usually the mutual funds only invest in a single asset class in a single country, such as large cap stocks in the U.S., right? So if you go into a bear market here in the U.S., it doesn't matter how diversified you are, you're going to get crushed. Now, finance professionals like myself and Steve have understood that the true risk of any asset, any one asset, is its contribution to the risk of your whole portfolio. Okay? So you have to look at everything. What else are you holding? Are you in retirement? What's your risk tolerance? Are you trying to increase your risk or lower your risk? Are you bullish on the economy or are you bearish on the economy? Is this a growth stock or a value stock? And how is that different than the other stocks in your portfolio? And then over allocating to one particular stock or asset can really have a detrimental effect on a portfolio. And so, and this is a good example of how just a mutual fund is not sufficient diversification. It's Sequoia Fund. Symbol is SEQUX, and it was a great mutual fund for a long, long time. So I'm sure there were plenty of people in there that were chasing returns, and it was a fine fund to be in and a part of a diversified portfolio. But in 2005, just from September 1st to November 17th of 2015, they lost about 26%. And the reason is they got over-concentrated in VRX, Valiant. 30% of their portfolio was in Valiant, and turned out Valiant's a fraud. And it went down about 90%. Okay. And then you have to look at two different stocks. Say you want to buy Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan. And you think that that is adding diversification. But the problem is that they have an 89% correlation to each other. Meaning if you might as well just buy one with the same dollar amount and split it between Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan because you're not adding any diversification to your portfolio. But if you instead bought JP Morgan and Walmart, they have a negative correlation, negative 0.14%. So if you bought those two instead of Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan, you bought Walmart and JP Morgan, you would have a much more diversified portfolio. So that's a great example of how you need to understand how two different assets within a portfolio are correlated. And those are tools that we use for our clients. Now we're open to your money questions and comments. Give us a call. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me right now on InvestTalk.
Our podcast will continue in just a moment. So what do InvestTalk insiders know that others don't? Well, they have access to answers, investment resources that come straight from the desks of professional investors. Special watch list, for example, created to give investors an idea of the type of investments the pros consider. The webinar archive provides access to various lessons about how to invest properly. Just click on the InvestTalk tab on investtalk.com to sign up. It's free. We continue now with this Monday, August 8th InvestTalk. Not all money advice is helpful. Some so-called tips could even set you up for financial failure. 15 money tips you maybe should ignore. That's next time. What's your talking point right now? 888-99-CHART is how to reach us from anywhere in the U.S.
I have a question about California Credit Union. I'm going to get $50,000. Could I just put that $50,000 in a credit union CD insured for now? Thank you. Bye.
Yes. I think that's a pretty simple explanation. Yeah, there's no reason you can't. Credit unions are great. I bank at a credit union. I don't bank at one of the big banks. And usually you'll get a little bit better yield from a credit union. I know I do. If you ever need a loan, usually you get better rates as well, especially if you have a long-standing relationship with them. I think everybody should look at a credit union if you can get into one. That's good in your area. Usually they're kind of limited in their area, and that's kind of the downside. But you know, in today's day and age, I don't really use an ATM that often. Don't need to go in the bank that much because I can deposit, you know, digitally, etc. So nothing wrong with a nice, good California credit union. Now let's talk a little bit about, why do some companies pay a dividend while other companies do not? I think a lot of people ask this question in their own mind or maybe out loud. And in day and age where dividends are loved because it's really hard to find yield anywhere, it's important to understand what dividends are and what type of companies tend to pay dividends. And if you're getting a dividend from a company that maybe typically doesn't, maybe you should figure out why, and vice versa, right? Now, dividends are corporate earnings that companies pass on to their shareholders, typically. Hopefully there's earnings, enough earnings to pay out to shareholders. Sometimes they borrow money to pay dividends. That's something that you have to look at the payout ratio, and that gets more complex. But in generally, it's corporate earnings paid out to shareholders. Now, there are a number of reasons why corporations might choose to pass on some of their earnings on as a dividend. Also, there's a number of reasons why they may prefer not to. And the main type of companies that prefer not to are the fast-growing companies. Why is that? Why? Because usually they can redeploy that money in their business with a much higher return than giving it back to you, the shareholder. So instead, they'll open up new stores or hire new employees or spend more money on advertising. Companies can spend money in a lot of different ways to facilitate growth and continue the growth that they currently have. So typically the companies that pay out dividends are growth companies. But not always. Sometimes they're just large cap companies that don't. And their philosophy is not to. Berkshire Hathaway, for example. Warren Buffett. He doesn't pay out dividends. He rather reinvests it. He thinks he can deploy that capital better than the shareholders. And over time, he's shown that he can. Part of that is because of Geico, the leverage there. But there's a lot of reasons. But maybe they just want to start a new project. Maybe they acquire a new asset, whether it's another company or just a large facility. They could repurchase the shares instead of paying a dividend. There's a lot of options for the board of a company, the CEO of a company, CFO, to deploy capital. And many times, most of the times, firms choose to reinvest their earnings instead of using it to pay dividends. Now, however, mature companies that don't need to reinvest, or maybe they just don't have a lot of opportunities to reinvest in their business because they're so large and they've eaten up such a large part of their of the market share. They have huge market share that it's hard for them to gain more market share, so they maybe don't have those growth opportunities, so it's better for them to pay out dividends. Many companies do both. You know, think of Walmart. I just talked about how they bought a company, Jet.com, but they also pay a dividend. They can do both because their cash flows are so strong. And those are really the companies that you really want to own, are the ones that not only pay a dividend, but also redeploy some capital in their business to grow. They do both. And that's why I say don't focus on the absolute number. Oh, it's yielding 5% or 8% or whatever. Focus on, I think the most undervalued companies are the ones that have low dividend yields, 1-2%, but are growing that dividend over time because they're redeploying that capital efficiently and effectively. And those are the names that I think you should be focusing on. Don't focus on that one factor of, oh, it just yields 4%. Okay? Let's go to James in New York. How you doing, James?
I'm good. How are you tonight?
Doing great. Good to for you.
I wanted to ask you about Kate Spade, ticker symbol Kate.
Mm-hmm.
See that it's dipped down to like a low earlier in the year. It's now at $17 change.
Mm-hmm.
So I purchased an amount of it for a short-term attitude towards it to see if it might increase in the short term back to the low to mid-20s, if that would be possible.
Mm-hmm. So you're looking into it as a trade.
Exactly.
I think that's possible. I think the around $20 is going to be really, really big resistance. Anything above 22 would be very hard for me to see in the short to medium term. You know, it's had a big earnings disappointment, I'm assuming. Is that what happened a few days ago?
I believe so.
Yeah. So, it gapped down from, the end of last month. It closed at, closed at 21.69, and now it's at 17.46, hit a low of, $15 and change. So, it's having an oversold bounce on the earnings. I think it's just probably going to chop around here. I think getting back to 20, it might take a couple months. And, if the market starts to decline in the next couple months, I think it could easily break below, the 15 level, which where there's big support. So I understand what you're looking at for a bounce trade, but I don't see this as anything exciting to really jump on board with. I would be looking to get out sooner rather than later. 20 is a lot to ask for on this name.
Okay, and I wanted to ask you, separately, if they say, like, a stock has double bottoms,
mm-hmm.
does that usually indicate that there will be a rise after double bottoming? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, it's just saying that the price of the stock got to a level where it was before, and it started to rally from that level. So, for example, this is a kind of it's not a great double bottom, but it's kind of an example of a double bottom. You know, it bottomed earlier this year around the 15 level. We're talking about Kate Spade, K-A-T-E is the symbol. And after earnings, it fell right down near that level and starting to bounce. Now, double bottom would be something sustainable. But I'm not seeing that here. I don't think the fundamentals support a sustainable rally in this name. And in fact, I think eventually it'll break below 15. So a double bottom really is it got to a certain level, it rallied from there, and it's now back at that bottom, and it's found support again. So it has two bottoms, and many times there'll be a third bottom, a triple bottom, and that's usually where the strongest bottoms come in, and that's where you really want to pick things up, is at a triple bottom. And with a tight stop below that support level, right? And that's usually the best trade. Make sense?
Right, okay.
Thanks for calling.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for calling, James. Now, KP Financial, KPP Financial, has an assortment of investment programs designed to fit every life situation and goal. There's our Select Growth and Income program. It consists of mutual funds handpicked for diversity, strength, and flexibility. You can see more about it on investtalk.com, along with all of our other investment programs that are designed for income and growth and all different types of risk profiles and goals. So just click on the investing tab on investtalk.com.
Why not join our InvestTalk Insiders? One of the many easy-to-read info sheets is all about managing a bond portfolio. Important information in this low-interest rate environment. These are quick-read 1- and 2-page info sheets on popular money topics available to InvestTalk Insiders at no cost. It's free to join. InvestTalk.com is where you sign up. Click on the InvestTalk tab.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have about 15 minutes left in the show, so if you're going to call in, do it ASAP. 888-99-CHART is our number. You can also text that number and get your question through. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about Walmart's announcement to spend $3.3 billion to buy Jet.com. This is an e-commerce play. Jet.com is a relatively new company, and really it's an online portal which uses an algorithm to adjust the prices for air travel. It will complement Walmart's own e-commerce business which generated about $13.7 billion in revenue in fiscal 2016. And despite Jet.com being so new, it's already generated $1 billion in annual revenue, which is pretty impressive. So they're growing dramatically. Walmart's going to buy are going to spend $3 billion on it, plus $300 million in Walmart stock. And I think this is actually a great move. Jet.com's CEO will stay on. Mark Lohr will be retained as the top chief for both Jet.com and Walmart's online business. And this is all about Amazon. Walmart's online business grew 12% last year. Well, Amazon's grew 25%. So it just shows you that there's a lot of catching up that Walmart has to do. But they're hell-bent on making it happen. And this is, I think, a great sign that they're willing and able to make the deals that are necessary to get them moving in that direction, to really be side-by-side with Amazon. And I think that's what they need to do. And I think this will help them rise above the ranks of the Targets and Best Buys of the world and closer to the Amazon of the world. So this is a great example of a strategic acquisition. They might have overpaid for it, but strategy-wise, long-term, it could pay off because of the strengths of Jet.com. And I think this is a rare, good strategic acquisition. Let's go to John in San Francisco. How you doing, John?
Yes, thank you. I love your show.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
The opinion on iDog, symbol is IDOG.
Okay. So you're looking at, this is the Alps International Sector Dividend Dogs ETF, right?
Correct.
Okay. Yields about 4%. This is a foreign large cap value fund, really. Its top holding is AstraZeneca. Rio Tinto's in its top five. It's pretty diversified in foreign markets. 97.5% of its portfolio is in foreign markets. Are you after that 4% dividend?
Okay.
Is that what you're after?
Yes.
Yeah.
And how safe is it? Is it a good?
This isn't safe. It's you're looking at foreign companies. Generally, most of them are large, so that's good. So they're large, safe companies. So they're probably not going to go out of business. But you know, if we go into a bear market here domestically, that's also probably going to feed into the foreign markets, and I believe we'll probably have some European banking crisis in the near future. Possibly by the end of the year, and that could feed into many of the names that are being held in this fund. So to say it's safe, no, there's really not a lot of super safe assets out there that are yielding 4%. There are none that I would call safe assets that are yielding 4% in this market. There might be some select corporate bonds that go out 7 to 10 years. But that's about it. So you're going to see volatility in this name, and you're going to get your 4% probably. But understand that you're going to get volatility. Okay, John?
Thank you very much.
No problem. He was looking at IDOG, and everyone's out there looking for dividends, and people are chasing yield, and that's why it's important. I'm glad that he called me. He's looking at a name that, while it's not the riskiest name in the market, it's certainly up, you know, higher than average on the risk scale, because you're dealing with foreign currency risk, etc. So be cognizant when you are trying to find yielding assets. You're chasing yield of what risk you are taking, and it might be okay. You might be okay with that risk, but make sure you're going into it with your eyes wide open. Now, we're open to your money questions and comments at 888-99-CHART. That's how you get through to me right now. Now, Steve has a date in August this month to meet via Skype or telephone. It's actually just a couple days away, August 10th. He has it lined up. So you want to talk to him, get a portfolio review, see where your goals are, and see how maybe you can make some positive adjustments to get to your goals. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab, and then Portfolio Review.
Hello, this is Greg from Tennessee. I wanted to get your take on a stock, Digirad Corporation, DRAD. I'm having trouble figuring out the earnings numbers and stuff. It looks like the PE is low historically, and I just wanted to see what you think about this for a growth play. Thank you. Bye.
All right, he's looking at Digirad Corporation. They're in the medical device field. They provide nuclear radiology imaging and ultrasound imaging services and cardiac event monitoring services. It also sells medical diagnostic imaging systems. So it's in the medical device space, and it's about a $5 share stock. It's declined pretty rapidly recently. From a high of about $6 early or late last month, and now it's at $5.13. So it's down about 20% very quickly. Yields about 4%. Its payout ratio is low, but its cash dividend payout ratio is very high. I think this is an example of earnings manipulation, because it's saying that it's earning a lot. Its earnings per share is $1.63, trading at $5. Normally, I would say, oh, that looks fantastic, right? That P ratio is very low. It's only a 3 P ratio. I'm going to say that's misleading. Its cash flow from operations is going up, but not that dramatically. And I think you're getting misled by that earnings per share number. I'm not sure what's driving it and what drove it up. I mean, 2014, it made 13 cents a share. 2015, it made $1.10, and now it made $1.64. And it doubled revenue, but I don't know how, you know, earnings can go up that dramatically. Even operating cash flow really hasn't changed that much. Only up, gone up a couple million. So I'm not seeing it. I think it's a high-risk name. I see what you're looking at, but I think you're being misled by a manipulated earnings number. I need to do a lot more research, and I don't think that 4% dividend yield is sustainable. All right. 888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. We have a few minutes left, so if you are going to call in, you need to do it ASAP. Now, let's talk about five signs that you're living beyond your means. The first is your credit score is below 600. I would say even below 700. If you're just below 700, you need to get it up. And you're probably doing what number three is your credit card balances are rising. Are you letting those rise? Are you paying them off at the end of each month? If you're not, you're probably living beyond your means. Number two, are you saving less than 5% of your income? At least 5%? If you're older and you're catching up, it needs to be much higher than that. If you're younger, I'd say 5% is the minimum. I think 10% should be everyone's goal. And if you didn't do that for many, many years, your goal now should probably be 15%. Okay, so I know the average person doesn't save a lot, but that doesn't mean you need to be like the average person. Our goal here is to help you become better than average, right? So get that savings rate above at least 5%. Make sure you get your company match in your 401k and go from there. Number four is you're spending more than 28% of your income on your house. Whether that's rent or that's all in costs for owning a home. Now, I know here in California that might be a little bit different. It's kind of a stretch to get anywhere close to that 30% number. But I would say 40 is the max you should be spending. 40 is the max you should be spending. And you should try to keep it below that 30 level. I know it's difficult in California, but that's just how it is. All right. Now our time is up. A reminder, if you have a question about any money topic at all, from 401k rollovers to real estate to an individual stock or bond or mutual fund or ETF, whatever it is, CDs, you can contact me directly. Just go click on Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com. I'm Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KPP Financial. We are a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's get together again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.